Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. I am so excited to have my friend and sister podcast show host, Amy Brado, as my guest today. Amy is the host of the podcast Raising the Bar on the Voice America Network, and she is a budding motivational speaker, mentor for leadership development, wellness coach, figure competitor, and hosts a radio show, like I said, Raising the Bar. Amy is also the co-founder and president of the Echo Foundation, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit organization for adoption and orphan care projects in the U.S. and abroad. Echo is currently serving with a partner organization in Ethiopia as well, and you can contact Amy to learn more about that at amy.raisingthebar@gmail.com, or you can message her through her website, amybrado.com, AmyBraido. I was on Amy's show on May 19th. We did the show called A Listener's Experience with Narcissistic Abuse. And also on April 22nd, we did Narcissistic Abuse Disorder, Are You a Victim? So I've been on her show twice. She's on my show today, and I'm really excited to introduce her to you so we can get started. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. Thank you so much. Well, when I hear all the things that I do all in order like that, it's pretty impressive. Just kidding.
Sounds good, doesn't it? Yeah, it sounds good. Well, thanks for being my guest today. Amy's originally from Chicago, from Illinois, but she's in my neck of the woods in Florida today. So it's kind of funny. Anyway.
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I'll bet you are. So can you tell us a little bit, we're going to talk today about childhood abandonment issues, and can you tell us a little bit about your story so that, you know, we understand where you're coming from?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think my story isn't probably a whole lot different than most people that struggle with abandonment issues, just in maybe the context of feeling. But, you know, I grew up mostly with a single mom. My parents were very young when I was born. My mom was 20. My dad was 19. Both of them came from homes that didn't have your typical mother-father situation. Though everybody's parents were married, you know, there was heavy alcoholism on both sides and a lot of enabling going on. So I feel when I personally analyze my parents that, you know, there were probably a lot of issues between the two of them that led to that kind of to be passed on to me. My mom decided to leave my dad when I was about 18 months old. He was, like I said, a very, very heavy drinker, even at such a young age, and had a violent side to him. So that, you know, wasn't a very safe situation. So I think, you know, being raised by a single mom is not the worst thing in the world. In fact, it was probably the best decision my mom could have made. But I think just that feeling of not having a father figure around probably the start of where feelings can arise when you are legally moved from a parent or neglected by a parent, of just kind of feeling abandoned. You know, she always knew where he was. I think that there was no effort on his end to really see me or spend time with me. And when there was, mostly I would go to my grandma's and he would go out and do his thing or bring me to a bar or, you know, it wasn't like a quality time situation of being able to see my dad. So, you know, I think that a lot of negative seeds were planted in me at a very young age that, you know, you're too little to realize what's a lie in your mind and what's really the truth. So I think now, as a 42-year-old woman, I, you know, I'm starting to be able to unpack a lot of these boxes that I've collected over the years of things I perceived from others, or things that I would tell myself, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's so sad to start off life that way. When was the last time you saw your father?
1990, actually. I, you know, the backstory to that is, being raised with a single mom, I did go into a foster care situation for a little less than a year with family, yet still it was all legal, so that he couldn't, like, get me, per se, if something had happened to my mom. So there was some issues there of feeling like I was kind of abandoned by both parents, though that was the best thing my mom did for me, so she could get on her feet. You know, I can see that as an adult. So now, moving forward, the last time I saw him was 1990. I was very sick with mono, and I know lots of kids get mono. I was 16, but I had like every possible complication you can get with mono. I got it. I really do things all or nothing, Randy. I was in the hospital, literally, like, I was in a Catholic hospital, so like the nuns would come in every day and like pray over me because they thought I was going to die. And he came. I want to say, I think I was in the hospital 12 days, and I feel like, from what I can remember, he was there 7 times, you know? So I can remember feeling like in my state of just fever and feeling, yeah, like, wow, I wonder if this is going to be new, because he thinks he's going to lose me. So that was not the case. That was not the case. You know, I got better. I bounced back. I did my senior year of high school. I'm fine. And I can just remember really having, like, that hope. And, I mean, I would have that at different times through my life, but I remember that actual conscious thought of, like, maybe I'm going to have something with him, you know, because he thinks he's going to lose me. And it was very hard when it you know, didn't change. I feel like as soon as I was out of the hospital, then he didn't really check in anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you had your mom remarried, and you had a very good stepfather, didn't you?
Yes, absolutely. You know, my mom, you know, I love her to pieces, and she really always, I think, tried to do the best she could for me. And then when she remarried, they had my sister. That's actually who I call my dad. So it's interesting when I refer to my biological father as my dad. It feels very weird for me. It feels very strange for me to call him that. So I always call him Hanson. That was my maiden name. But when she met John, you know, I was probably 2 or 3. And so they had a great friendship for a few years before they ever really dated. And I can always remember him saying, like, I loved you even before I loved your mom. And I always hold on to that. It was always such a... I was a feeling, that statement gave me a feeling throughout my whole life that I've just carried, like a refreshing thing. It was like a hopeful statement, and just such a feeling of love to hear that. You know, unfortunately, they divorced when I was 10. So even though he was in my life, it still wasn't like having your dad at home. And interestingly, you know, I have a girlfriend I've been friends with since I was 11 years old, and I did a lot with her and her family. We'd go on vacations and all this stuff, and we were just talking about her dad the other night. You know, he'd, like, make us breakfast sometimes before school and, you know, weekend stuff, and I always just loved, you know, being around her family. And not until recently, as her dad is getting older and talking about him, did I realize, like, how much it really was that I loved being around her dad, because I didn't understand that. You know, So I've had some great fatherly figures in my life, and my dad, meaning John, my sister's biological father, like, that's my dad. He walks me down the aisle, like, that's my dad. I don't feel like blood necessarily gives you that right. So, yeah, I mean, there's been great things. I wouldn't consider my life a sad story. I mean, parts of it, but definitely not all of it.
Well, you know, you can move on and you can have a wonderful life and you can have surrogate fathers or parents or
mm-hmm.
things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But something about that initial abandonment is it just sticks with you. And how does it manifest in your life, or, you know, at its worst, how did it manifest in your life?
You know, I can remember, the weird thing is I think when people go through traumatic experiences, you either remember them forever or you block them out and they come out sideways. And I think I have a little bit of both of that. You know, with Hanson, my biological father, you know, I can remember him saying things like, you know, too bad you weren't a boy because you're the last Hanson and now nobody's going to carry it along. His three sisters, you know, only one ended up having two children and she had two girls and clearly they weren't Hanson. So I felt like that was like a kick in the teeth at three or whenever he told me that. And, you know, he would say things like, I can remember being in third grade and having a weekend with him. And I think I told you this where I was like, oh, there's this boy, Mark, in my class and he's so cute. And he was like, keep your clothes on. And I can remember thinking like, what does that mean? And why would I not have my clothes on? You know, like, and then, so it was like moments like that when we were together and then we weren't together. So I always kind of found myself feeling this sense of anxiety, I guess, or yeah, you know, like I always say I would have to do the behavioral tap dance for my parents in different situations, but with Hanson, always. I didn't know how to act and know how to be, and know, I didn't know how to be good enough. That's how that started. That it manifested itself in like, I'm not good enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not good enough. I'm not a boy, I shouldn't like that boy, I shouldn't say anything, I shouldn't do anything, so I just need to sit and be happy. And it wasn't a happy feeling to be with him.
Right, right. And so,
or without him, for that matter, you know? It was
right,
like a no-win
exactly.
situation.
I mean, right. I mean, when you're young, like you say, you don't really understand why you're not getting your parents' love. You just know that you're not getting it, and it feels very personal, and it feels as if you have something to do with that, and that you carry that feeling throughout your life. So,
yeah.
How did it impact your adult relationships?
I think that I headed into adult relationships way too early in my life. I think that I always seek, I don't know if always is the right word, I think that I did. I sought approval from men. You know, I got my first boyfriend as a sophomore in high school, and he was great. He actually became a best friend. I ended up dating him for 3 years, which is kind of unheard of at such a young age, I think, in a lot of cases. But I think that I had... I can't identify the emotion in a word, but, you know, I was just wanted to cling to that relationship. Or, you know, when that ended, I was like trying to find another one. I feel like I never have allowed myself to be independent because I was always seeking approval. You know, and I see that a lot in young girls. And in society these days too, and even girls that don't necessarily have father issues. But I think for me, I know that that's, you know, looking back now, I know that that's why I would respond that way or act that way. I mean, I'm not saying I went crazy and had tons of boyfriends, but I feel like I jumped into adult things early in life as a teenager that I could have waited for. And I think emotionally, I just set myself up for a lot of devastation, just trying to grasp for that approval.
Well, sure. I mean, it takes a healthy parent to raise a child who has such great self-esteem that they can go out into the world, you know, and be an individual in entirety and be able to function that way with or without a partner or someone to lean on. So that's a difficult thing. you know, coming from two parents who weren't completely, you know, equipped to do this job,
right.
There's no doubt that you would have this experience. And I think it's like you say, it's pretty typical with young girls who feel a little bit insecure.
Mm-hmm.
And that also, right, that also comes with age because,
yes.
you know, like in middle school and everything, you're trying to be like everybody else. And so there is insecurities. And that also carries over into high school too. But, you know, but it is pretty common. Now, so when did you realize that this was a problem for you, and did you go get help for this?
I did. You know, it was funny. I was talking to my mom about it, I mean, a couple of years ago, and I went to therapy as a young kid. I can remember being like, I think second grade. And I did ask my mom years later, like I said, in pretty recent times, you know, why did I go see Larry? That was his name. And she goes, you know, because I felt so sad. You'd always be upset about your dad and all this stuff. And I didn't know how to handle it. And you brought a picture home from school one day. And, you know, I guess my mom said I had drawn her and I very beautifully, very detailed and everything. And then I draw a dad with two heads. And,
ooh.
Yeah, and she's like, you know, what's that about? And I said, well, I spent so much time on drawing myself and drawing you. Like, I was so tired, I figured I would just draw a dad with two heads and get it over with because we were running out of time. And as funny as that is, you know, and knowing me, I'm kind of a dork and I'm silly and I goof around a lot. Like, that doesn't surprise me that I would say that. But that was kind of like a red flag for her. And so then I guess one day, I wish I could remember the exact circumstance, but she said that I spoke these words to her, I think maybe after I came back from a weekend with Hanson, and she said, I was really upset, and she asked me what the problem was, and I said, like, was able to verbalize as such a young kid, like, he's never here, he acts like he doesn't like me, and then Dad, who is John, her husband, says he's here for me, but I just think everybody's always going to leave me. And she, and this is after I had been in foster care, you know, when I was three, and I looked at her and I said, you even gave me away. And if you gave me away and Hanson's never here, no one is ever going to stay with me. And that's 7 years old.
Oh, my heart aches
so,
for that child.
Yeah, it actually makes me ache saying it, because I don't always put all those pieces together. But, you know, so I went to therapy. And it's funny because my memories of my time with Larry is a lot of playing hide and seek and a lot of drawing. I always loved to draw. I went to school for art in college, and I probably shouldn't make time to draw in my life now. But, you know, so I just remember drawing a lot. And then he'd always be asking me questions while I was drawing, and I would be like, stop talking to me. I'm trying to draw, you know, or he'd talk to me while we were playing hide and seek. And I'd be like, Larry, please stop asking me questions because you're going to know where I am. You know, like, I don't really know how much I got out of that, but at least they're good memories for me, you know, and it makes me giggle thinking about it, but it makes sense to me, you know, playing hide and seek or getting things out. But I know that he did call Hanson in. He wanted to meet my biological father and kind of see what he was dealing with. And I remember my mom telling me this when I was older because I can remember the change in our conversation. You know, moms are good. They want to ease our little sad hearts. And I can remember saying, like, you know, I don't know why he does that, but he loves you. And so the message, and I would tell my kids the same thing, like, I have no blame towards my mom, but, like, so that message to me, Randy, was like, okay, he loves me, but he's not here. And he loved me, but I'm not good enough. And it was so hard to carry. So hard to carry.
Right, it is, and it defines, right, and it defines your interpretation of what love is. Or it skews it, actually, so that you really don't know what real love is.
Right, and I mean, even in my adult life, like, I've been married for 21 years, and God bless my husband for riding my crazy train, because there's been a lot of ups and downs with my baggage that I brought into my marriage, you know? He's got his own bag of beans, but I carry a heavier load, I think, in the dysfunction file, but I, you know, that message was so conflicting, so I guess when Larry met Hanson, when he followed up with my mom, he said, I'm going to tell you something. I have not ever in my career met somebody so incapable of loving anybody. And you need to stop telling your daughter that he loves her, because this guy could not get a grip on anything I was trying to convey to him. He's not safe emotionally. He is not stable to himself. And my best advice would be to not tell Amy anymore that he loves her, because he just can't. Which led me to think, the more I've talked to you, about the narcissism, because he wouldn't own anything. And when I was 27, I asked him to go to counseling. He's like, I don't feel like I need it, but if you need that for you, you know, maybe I can go with you and listen. Hmm. You know, thank God I'm his own child, is all I have to say. Because
right.
I would just want to save that other person. You know.
That's right.
So I can remember the shift in the conversations with my mom as a kid and as I got older. And so you see, like, when he would come to visit me when I was in the hospital with mono, I was hopeful that he really did love me. And when that fell through just meaning, like, you know, once I got home from the hospital, it was, like, here and there he'd call. I guess I wouldn't really call him, because by the time I was 17, I didn't really care. Or you know what I mean? You're selfish. You're a teenager. You do your thing. And, like, that was that. It was very frustrating. And the thing that really broke the camel's back for me, months later, at the end of 1990, I got in a bad car accident with my mom on the way to school one morning. And I remember calling him after, you know, I was home from getting checked out and everything, like, Dad, I just wanted to let you know, like, I had a bad car accident today and I hurt my back and, you know, I just wanted you to know. And his exact words, I'm not even kidding, were like, well, what, do you want me to send you money or something? And I was like, yeah, I'm done.
Wow.
you know, so there's been other attempts for relationships throughout the years, but I'm in a different place of healing. I've gotten more counseling. It's still hard every time. There's still a lot of boxes I think I still refuse to unpack, to be totally honest, because it's just, I get to a place when I'm like, if I let all of this out, like all of it, like I think I will not recover. Does that make sense?
Well, it does make sense, but there's also, there is a safety of holding on to that, and there's also
right, it's fear.
Sometimes it almost defines you, and that, you know, some people are afraid to let it all go because they don't really know who they'll be, and it, you know, it leaves you. It's terrifying to not know who you'll be. Is that in any way relatable?
It's relatable, I think, for the Amy that I was maybe 3 years ago, or the things I have held on to. I've been finding in these last 2.5 years, really, and I still have so much growing to do and so much learning to do, and I'm almost backtracking from what I just said, but really, I feel like I'm in a place with him. You know, I have to say I've gotten the one most affirming thing I've gotten from him is when we adopted our son in 2007, I can't remember if I let him know or I let my grandma know or whatever. And it's sad because I didn't see my poor little grandma for like 20 years. And I love her. Like, now we have a relationship, but, you know, she's 82. Anyway, but when I told him that we had gone and adopted and it was something I wanted to do since I was a little girl, clearly he didn't know that. He said, wow, you know, you have grown to be such an amazing woman. And if I have never told you before, I just want you to know how proud I am of you.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm sure I have the email still in my email somewhere. But it was like something I had longed for my whole life, clearly from him. And it was something I really needed. For me, I feel like I really needed that. It gave me such freedom. It made me feel like all these chains or, I don't know how else to word it, but any, like, kind of chain I had tied around me or rocks that I had in a bag upon my back with him were able to just fall off.
Wow. I mean, that was such great validation,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, a lot of abused children, especially those who've been raised in narcissistic families or with narcissistic mm-hmm. parents never, ever receive that validation. And you're better off just having it stop right there because that was enough
right.
for you. Right. If you had continued a relationship with that, with him, it would have broken your heart again because he's not capable
yes.
of holding that up. So you got him in his very best moment and you hold on
yep.
to that, and that is very healing. I agree with you.
Yeah.
So you talked about you always wanted to adopt a child, and you ended up fulfilling that dream in a very unusual way. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So going back, in the same moments, I was probably right out of therapy with Larry. I remember being a hot summer day. I was like, I can remember standing in front of the TV, staring at it, knowing that I really wanted to be outside playing with my friends. But I was like captivated by something, and it I kind of giggle. I don't remember, but it was like a Sally Struthers infomercial thing or something about the famine in Ethiopia that was going on. So this must have been like, what, 1981 or something. And I was watching it, and, you know, you're looking at the moms that are all so skinny, and they don't even have enough milk in their breast to feed their kids, and there's flies on the babies. And I was like, what? Because it was my first exposure to knowing that that was going on in the world. And I looked at it, and then in the background, there were all the older kids. You know, I believe God put this in me and believe that. So in my memory, you know, I'm watching this show and there's all these older kids in the background. But then they like never talked about those big kids. And I don't know why that bothered me so much, but it really, really bothered me, Randy. And I got so upset. So I'm standing there. I remember my friend Jenny like pounding on my screen door, like, hurry up. And I'm like, I'm coming. And I'm sobbing in front of the TV. So I turned off the TV. I wiped my face off. I did my thing. But I can remember telling my mom that night at dinner and my dad and just saying, there were all this, you know, all these boys, all these big kids, and no one talks about those big boys. And someday I'm going to go to Ethiopia and I'm going to adopt one of those big boys. And she was like, okay. You know, calm me down.
Right.
Calm me down.
Sure.
So it was just always in me. And apparently another girlfriend I had when I was 9 years old, who I'm still friends with, she told me I told her this. The funny thing is that I moved around a lot as a kid, probably, you know, because my mom divorced and then we would move or whatever. So I was in a lot of different schools as a kid. Well, that was like the summer before second grade or third grade or something. In fourth grade, I switched schools. So I went to school with Kathy from like fourth to sixth grade. So years later, fast forward to 2007, she stops by at my house. And I'm, you know, telling her what's going on in my life. And we were just catching up and seeing each other for like 5 years. And she's like, are you kidding? She's like, you told me that when we were little. I'm like, what? I didn't remember I told her. And then I'm thinking, well, why the heck would I tell her that? Like, we were at a new, you know, I was at a new school. I don't know, but I just got such a kick out of that. And I'm such a huge believer now. Like, if you say it out loud and you want it to happen and you say it or you claim it that you're going to do it, like, you do it. And I never realized that about myself until so many years later into my adulthood, that when I would write something down or speak it, it was real. It became real.
So you went over to Ethiopia, and
mm-hmm.
how did that all? What did you do? I mean, how did you know what to do?
It's crazy. You know what? My husband and I, we were college freshman year of college. We started dating. So we're college sweethearts. We ended up, you know, getting married and having our first child, like, right out of college. You know, sometimes planning isn't always key in my mind, I guess. But so we had our kids really young. I had a child at 21, 23, and 26. So that's crazy, you know. Yeah, and so then one time we were on one of his business trips in North Carolina, and in church they had been talking about, like, fostering and getting uncomfortable and all this stuff. And I don't know, we just started talking about it, and I was telling him this, and he's like, how have I been with you for 20 years, and I don't know this story? I'm like, I don't know. So I told him about the sobbing summer story, and interestingly, he's like, well, maybe we should look into that. And I was like, really? And he's like, okay. So we bounced around the ideas of fostering and or adopting domestically, you know, when I looked into that, unfortunately at the time they were like, well, you guys have three biological children and so you can adopt, you know, you can try to get a foster child, but, you know, be prepared to have their families involved and stuff. And it wasn't that I'll never do that. It just wasn't, the timing didn't feel right with that. And so that's when that Ethiopia thing kept resonating with me. And literally we got home from a trip on a Sunday and started looking online and getting information about international adoption. And I get really mixed, weird feelings in my stomach to say at the time, like, there was a site that had like some pictures of available children. And I saw my son's face, and I'm telling you, Randy, like every hair on my body stood up. I'm like, oh, that's the kid. You know, and Joe was like, yeah. You know, and his little bio was something like, I do really well, and you know, he does really well in school, and he likes to play out with the kids, and he wants to go to church, and he wants to get baptized. And I didn't know what his faith was at the time or whatever, but just, I don't know, something about his face and his eyes, and I still have that picture. And so I called the agency, and we just prayed. We're like, God, if this is the right thing, like, let all the doors open, and if any door closes, then we know. Randy, 9 months. Start to finish.
Unbelievable. How old was he at the time?
He was almost 11. So he was almost 11, and the orphanage that he was in, it's pretty run down, but it's really, I love the women. We call him Ishmael is his name. We call him Ish. That's his nickname. He likes that nickname. He chose it. We call him the mothers because it's really what they are. They're amazing. And I love the mothers. You know, I think that for as run down as it is in appearance, it's probably, I don't know. I just feel like it was a good place for him. I've seen worse and I've seen a lot better. But yeah, it just was wild, wild, wild ride.
How was it for him to come to the United States? I mean, that had to be such a culture shock for him.
Yeah, you know, fortunately, we used the Gladney Center for Adoption there in Texas. I loved them. I had a great experience with them. I would recommend them to anybody, you know, whether it's domestic or international adoption. But, you know, they had a camp in 2006, so he actually was able to spend 3 weeks in New York with a bunch of kids. And so what this camp was it was like people that were looking to adopt or – you know, would host these kids and they would do all these activities and come and see America and everything. He ended up being paired up with another one of his friends that he had been with since they were like five. And that woman decided to only adopt, you know, Barakat, that child.
And oh, how heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking, you know, and I was able to connect with her. You know, my husband and I actually helped her financially with some things so that her adoption was possible. But I remember asking her, like, you know, what was it like, why didn't you want to adopt Ish? And she's like, well, he just was very stubborn and strict in some things, and he didn't mesh well with my younger daughter. And I was like, okay, you know, he is stubborn. He's stubborn. He's great. He and my youngest daughter have very similar personalities, so I find that if anybody's butting heads, it's usually those two. I feel that she didn't choose to adopt him because he was ours.
Okay.
You know,
it was just meant to be.
I really do.
Right.
Her, yeah, and she's great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with her, her lifestyle. She's more free-spirited, a little less structured, and that's okay. But, you know, now I see God's hand in it. Like, it just, you know, and Barakat's in New York, and another little best friend since he was five is in Arizona. And they finally were able to see each other in 2010, but, like, everybody's connected on Facebook. He doesn't speak to them like you would think, but I think his satisfaction of knowing that they're here makes him really happy. It was a hard transition for him because he left first. Even though that woman was adopting Barakat, her process started long before ours. I don't know if maybe she didn't have the means or something, but hers took 2 years. Like, it took her 2 years to get him over. So that he was pretty angry with me for a long time, I think. It just seems to come out at me like when he was frustrated with things. It's interesting. But Yeah, he adjusted so well. I mean, Randy is a miracle. Anybody that's afraid to adopt an older child, they make you read scary, scary books and take all these classes and whatever. And my advice would be, if you feel in your heart like this is your why and this is right, then you just have faith and you dive in and you do whatever you can do. And is it going to be perfect? Absolutely not. Are you going to make mistakes? Oh, yeah, a ton. I've made a ton. I make mistakes every day. But just do it. Because if you are called to do something or prompted, like, you got to just dive in, because these kids deserve a chance, you know?
Bless your heart. I mean, you know, it's just, the world has gotten so much smaller with all the technology and everything.
Right.
But, you know, at that time, Ethiopia was worlds away. I mean, that,
it
just,
really is.
It's just,
so,
it, yeah. You know, and like I said, now technology connects us with every corner of the world. So it's, the world doesn't feel so, you know, so widespread and so far away. But God bless you for that. That is just an amazing thing. I know it was always in your heart. So did you, were you the one that started the Echo Foundation?
Yeah, my husband and I, and I just wanted to throw in, when we went there in 2007 to pick up Ish, we met an older guy who was about 22 at the time, who, long story short, he is not legally adopted, but he's definitely ours. We've helped him finish college. We've helped him find work. He's actually working in partnership with our foundation now. So you can adopt. I want everyone to know, like, you can adopt without the legality in so many ways. You can help. As far as the Echo Foundation, yes, my husband and I and a group of people that we went to church with kind of started it more like a, we were trying to start more like a little church ministry thing. The church we go to is really huge, and that's great, but it seems to make some kind of action a struggle at times, I guess. So we were like, you know what? We will serve the people in our church as best we can, but we're going to do this on our own. And so we created it to be as a 501c3. We labeled it, you know, for adoption and orphan care projects, which is awesome, Randy, because we really have the freedom to do whatever the heck we want. you know, we've been able to grant a few adoption scholarships. We can plan mission trips. We've had great partnerships with some organizations in Nicaragua, in the U.S., and in Ethiopia. So, gosh, my dream for it would be to be global. I just need the hands and the hearts, you know, to come alongside me.
So if anybody's interested in helping you out with that, how, you know, how do they get involved?
You know, they can, I'm sure, get a hold of you, and you can point them to me. They can email me at, we'll just keep it the Raising the Bar email so people don't get confused that are listening, but amy.raisingthebar@gmail.com. If anybody wants to read a little bit about it, if they go to amybrado.com and click the Echo Foundation, there's some information there. I'm actually working with someone to update my site because I'm so busy with things, I feel like that's the last thing I focus on. And I really need to put more content on it. We have a great partnership right now that is with an organization called CARE, the Care Centers for Children and Elders Life Association. And the program that's been created that Abadir, our other son, is spearheading is the training of the caregivers, starting first and foremost with the people that are in charge of raising these children. You have so many psychological disorders with abandonment, as you know, so many things that they have to tend to, and they really have not been equipped to understand the psychology of these kids. So we really, really were wanting to develop a program that I hope just snowballs throughout the world of orphanages, because there are too many kids that are, you know, tied down in their cribs and neglected, or left three kids to a bed and the door is closed on them each night. And a lot of countries. I'm not pointing at Ethiopia solely. So it is. So that is a huge focus. And then the organization also has about 19 children that they're caring for and 15, I hope I have the numbers right, elders. They get to come in and get proper medical care, meals, and clothing. And it's really about caring for our elders, too, because a lot of them grew up as orphans with nothing. So
where do you get your funds from?
Right now, I just have had private donations. My husband and I actually do fund a lot of this on our own. I want to say we We contribute quarterly to CCELA organization. We've probably contributed about 75% of our funds for the adoption scholarships and our projects, but I do have now, through the radio show and hopefully here today, people that are really like, hey, I didn't even know this existed. I want to help. So I'm currently setting up a way for people to make online contributions, and it will give them a receipt for their taxes. Everything is 100% tax deductible. And I do have a fundraiser in the planning right now. It will be in the Chicago area, but anybody is available or, you know, able to donate or attend. So more information will be posted about that on the site as it comes available.
Wow. Such a beautiful cause. Thank God for people like
you
who are willing to do something. Yeah, it's interesting. We come into this world with these missions. I think we come in with them, you know, that we know we're going to do these things. And it's just wonderful that you're taking care of these people that way.
Thank you.
You know, and the emotional component of it is so important, too, because
very healing.
Yeah, it is. It is. So, gosh, well, thanks, Amy. This has been wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you were able to be my guest today. And,
it
was fun. I know that you are kind of on vacation right now, so I hope you enjoy yourself. Stay out of the sun.
Absolutely.
Amy is burnt.
I'm a lobster on the front side, so an interesting day.
Okay.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, you are so welcome. Enjoy your day. Enjoy the rest of your trip. And I'll be in touch. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Randy.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So our time is up for today, but if you have any comments about today's show or any other shows, you can email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. RANDIGFINE.com. And also stop by my website, randygfine.com, for articles to read and connections to every show that I've done, all that, everything that you want to know about me and what I do is there. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host, author, and Life Issues Counselor Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, randygfine.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be better way.